It's Monday, September 25th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show presented by NerdWallet. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is the one and only Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. It was a fun day. It was a record-breaking day. There were some incredible highs today, some incredible lows. And then we got a competitive game on Sunday night to cap it all off. So another week in the books. Let's break it down.
Yeah, some highs today. We had a team score 70 points. Absolutely unbelievable. But that is not what we're going to break down here first. Scott and I are going to run through every game that happened here on Sunday. And you know how it works here on Sunday night. We're basically just, you know, firing off the cuff, shooting from the hip. We're reacting in real time. But if you want a more sober, calm, level-headed reaction to all the things that you are panicking about, don't forget to send in your submissions to the People's Panic Meter, fantasy mailbag at yahoosports.com. That's when Andy and I on Tuesday's podcast will break down everything from, again, more of a level-headed perspective. I'm not sure we have anything level-headed to say about the Denver Broncos defense. I would be panicking if I was Sean Payton and I decided to come back to this nonsense. But again, that's for Tuesday's podcast. For today's podcast, we start this off with a game that I think was far more entertaining and frankly, far more fantasy juicy than people would have thought. Pittsburgh Steelers 23, Las Vegas Raiders 18 on Sunday Night Football, Scott. Hey, the Steelers offense got a multi-touchdown game out of Kenny Pickett. They beat a team. So all is right in the world with the Steelers offense, right, Scott?
Well, it's a step forward. They had just a stone bad setup with the schedule. They play San Francisco and Cleveland. That might be the two best defenses in the league. Certainly two of the top five. Man, did Cleveland just stuff Tennessee in a trash can today? And we know how good the Niners are. So we wanted to see what could the Steelers do against a bad defense. Now, I'm not going to throw a parade for Kenny Pickett for throwing two touchdowns. They put up 23 points. They kind of took the air out of the ball late and just held off the Raiders. But it ended up being a decent fantasy game on both ends because both concentrations were narrow, right? I mean, the Raiders were especially narrow. We know that there's really three guys you can use on that team. But at least it's funny, like all the Steelers I liked as sleepers the previous week, I'm like, oh, you know, maybe Calvin Austin will do something on Monday. Maybe Pat Freiermuth. And they both do nothing on the Monday game. I think you had to back off those guys. They both score a touchdown today. George Pickens is getting behind defenses every week. Jaylen Warren is starting to get more involved. Not that Warren necessarily popped. It's hard to know how to take the Pittsburgh rushing numbers at face value because they were ahead by so much in the second half. It becomes just don't fumble, don't give the game away, don't picket the game away. And so you see Najee Harris, you know, just making sure he doesn't fumble and not really trying to gain yardage. You know, Warren had a couple of touches like that. But I just wanted the Steelers, great summer, horrible opener. They win the second game because their defense is great and because Deshaun Watson played terrible. But the offense, you know, they made one play to Pickens in that game and Warren had a couple of plays. That was about it. So We just wanted to learn that we could trust the Steelers again. We could feel good about Pickens. We could feel good about maybe flexing Warren if we need to. Maybe playing, I guess Harris is going to be a running back too now. Pat Freiermuth, who we talked a lot about this summer. We just wanted a reason to believe in some of these guys. Nobody on the Steelers is going to the moon. Okay, that dream, I think, has died. Yeah. But a win is a win. You don't give them back. They beat their team total, which I was happy to see. And, you know, with a guy like Freiermuth, it's a very low bar to clear, right? If he can just get, what did he get tonight? Only four targets, but he has goal line equity. He gets 41 yards and a touchdown. That makes you a hero at tight end. If Jaylen Warren can get double-digit touches every week, he had 11 today. That makes him a flex play on the ugly running back street. So, you know, a step forward for Pittsburgh. Now, I don't think the Raiders played all that great, but Davante Adams gets 19 targets. He probably got five more targets since we started recording this. But Jacoby Myers looked good doing his Jacoby Myers thing. And you know, Josh Jacobs had the backfield to himself. No other Raider running back had a carry. So I think the Raiders are one of the worst teams in football. I don't think this McDaniels thing is a good idea. Garoppolo is what he is. I mean, for at one point, I think he was the most overrated player in the NFL. But at least we know this. Davante Adams is going to be open. Jacoby Myers is going to be a security blanket. Josh Jacobs is the only guy getting the ball in the backfield. So even if this is a bad team, they should present three very playable fantasy options every week.
Yeah, lots to unpack here from this game. And starting on the Steelers side of it there, you know, they won the game, obviously, so we can start with them. You know, I hear your points about like the run game. Obviously, they're ahead in the second half. They were ahead by a decent amount there. But man, it's just every time Najee Harris gets the ball, like there's a little bit of there's a kind of a large section of fantasy analysts that are just very openly anti Najee Harris, and like they've already put him in the Melvin Gordon to Austin Eckler, you know, bucket with him and Jaylen Warren, or the Ezekiel Elliott to Tony Pollard bucket with him and Jaylen Warren there. I agree. He's not an explosive player, right? Like he runs a long time to gain 5 or 6 yards when he like is actually able to get room. But the guy really never has any room, Scott. They're 6 of 15 on third down in this game because they're really never in like positive down and distance situations. They're almost always like working from a deficit when they run the ball on first and second, or God forbid third down. Like this offensive line, I think, is still a huge problem. I think it's a problem for Kenny Pickett when they drop back to pass, because the Raiders aren't a good defense. And this was like, okay, how can you clear the very, very low bar of beating the Raiders defense? But Max Crosby is a werewolf. He's a Wolverine over there. Like he's going to get after the quarterback. And that was a problem for Kenny Pickett when he gets in those negative down and distance situations. So I feel like I come out of this one kind of thinking, you know what, this run game is not going to be good all year. Like I think it's a huge anchor on the entire offense. And like, I think the answer to why is it bad is, well, number one, Matt Canada's concepts, not good. Number two, the offensive line is bad. And number three, Najee Harris isn't a guy that, like, he's maybe going to get what's blocked for you, but that is quite literally about it. The schedule for Pittsburgh, they get Houston next week, who surprisingly, the Jaguars didn't get over that banged up secondary, so I don't know how to feel about the Steelers next week. They get Baltimore, who is dramatically injured. Then they go on their bye in week 6 and return to Rams, Jags, Titans, up until week 9 there. So yeah, I still feel very like, you know, I don't think we ever thought the Steelers were really going to the moon. We thought maybe they could get into the atmosphere, like they could get out of Earth's atmosphere, but maybe not quite all the way to the moon. But I'm still kind of like struggling where I see them at this point.
That's totally fair. I mean, you can say, well, what more could you want if you were a Harris manager, right? You play with the lead most of the way. You get 19 carries, and what do you get for it? 65 yards, no touchdowns, and no catches, only one target in the passing game. And Warren's role has gotten a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger the last 2 weeks. So the problem with Harris, if you drafted him, it's just not, as you said, he's not very well liked in the fantasy community. If you're trying to trade Najee Harris, you need to have something to take to market. You get a hope maybe next week he breaks off 115 in a touchdown against the Texans, and then you have something to sell, because right now you don't have anything to take. You know, people are like, oh, I saw the game. Yeah, he's sharing with another guy who catches the ball, and the Steelers are life and death to score 17 points every week.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's kind of the problem with Najee Harris right now. And that actually sort of transitions me into the Raiders side of it. And we can just talk about them really quick. It's funny, at one point, like Mike Tirico and I think Chris Collinsworth were breaking, like they're kind of like, why is this team so inconsistent? Like it feels like a very inconsistent team. And I can, you know, I'm sitting on my couch watching it, and I'm like, I can't think of a team that's better to be inconsistent on offense, that's more perfectly set up to be inconsistent on offense, because they have a really good wide receiver duo. I'd actually be curious, like, where you think Davante Adams and Jacoby Myers ranks as a wide receiver duo, because they don't have, like, you know, Jacoby Myers is like a perfect number two receiver, especially to an elite guy. And my God, what an elite game from Davante Adams on Sunday night. Jacoby Myers is like a perfect number two. He's not like one of these 1B guys, like in, you know, maybe Cincinnati or Philadelphia or Seattle or maybe even Tampa Bay. Maybe you still put them ahead of these two guys, but they're up there in terms of wide receiver duos. Myers is like still one of the most underrated players in the NFL, and Davante Adams, like I said, perfectly elite. But other than that, Scott, like what else do the Raiders really have going for them? Like Josh Jacobs, I'm curious where you stand on him at this point. This is another like kind of game from Josh Jacobs. And I think right now he is getting what's blocked for him, which is your job as a running back. But if you're going to be in like an elite tier running back, and Jacobs' calling card used to be like breaking tackles and adding more on top of his runs, but he's not, I don't think he's really doing that right now to this point. And this is another team with offensive line problems. And frankly, like we're talking about a team that has these really high highs, and they can be really splashy, but then there's these rocky moments. And frankly, that is Jimmy Garoppolo. So everything about the Raiders feels inconsistent to me.
Yeah, a problem with Jacobs' whole career, which is very common with running backs, is his game script has usually dictated his performance. Almost the overwhelming majority of his touchdowns have come in Raider wins, which is not uncommon for a running back. But I say to you, dear listener, how many wins do you see in this Raider schedule? Okay. Right. I know they already have one, which is, you know, they feel like an 0-3 team. They are 1-2. But they're I'm looking at their schedule. They look at five. This is staring 5-11 or 6-11 or 5-12 in the face. This 17-game schedule is always going to feel weird to me. And as producer Colin says, does the win over Denver count? You know, after week three, maybe it doesn't.
You only beat them by 1 point. Like, you didn't really beat them by anything if you only beat them by 1 point.
Matt, did you know the Broncos allowed 70 points today?
Allowed 70 points?
I mean, they used to be enough to win an NBA game. You know, it just blows my mind, man. What a world we live in. But I didn't draft a lot of Jacobs. I don't think I drafted any Jacobs. I didn't like what he was tied to. And as you say, they're struggling to move the pile. So the ball, if you want concentration, you got it. The problem is, you know, it's the concentration of a 5-12 football team.
Right. 22 targets between Adams and Myers. The next highest guy on the depth chart is 5, and that's Josh Jacobs, who touched the ball 20 times. So if Jacobs can pick it up, it actually is, even if they're not a good team, it's actually really... it's like the perfect offense for fantasy because it's so highly concentrated, like you said. Just looking at the Raiders schedule, I agree with you. They're going to lose some games here. If you do want to get out on the Jacobs business, or if you want to see like, hey, is it time to be optimistic? You get the Chargers next week. They get the Packers. They get the Patriots. Then they get the Bears in week 7. So there are some spots here to really see who Josh Jacobs is over the next few weeks. All right. Let's move on to the headliners from Sunday. And clearly, Scott and I want to talk about it so bad. 70 freaking points. We can't start anywhere else other than what went down in Miami. It almost feels weird not to open the podcast with this one, Scott, because this game, my goodness, it could have been a record breaker, but it wasn't. Mike McDaniel passed up the opportunity to do that. Miami Dolphins, 70. Yeah, no, I'm not mistaken. 70 points for the Miami Dolphins, 20 for the Denver Broncos. Scott, where do you want to start on this one?
This offense is a cheat code, man. You know, the Broncos, they're not a great team, but this isn't like the worst team in the NFL either. And they put up the easiest 70 in the world. There's so much speed. There's so much great design in this offense. They do it without Jalen Waddle. Tua basically played a perfect game. And let's give Tua credit, man. He's processing very quickly. He's extremely accurate. He's giving his receivers and today his running backs as well chances to make plays after the catch. No, you don't put up 70, Matt, most points in what, since 1966, I want to say. It may or may not be a record for total yardage, depending on who you use as a source. It's only the second time a team has had over 700 yards of total offense. Part of that's going to happen because the other team, you know, is somewhat complicit. I mean, Tyreek Hill was wide open on that first touchdown, but all I want is what everybody wants now is just a healthy season of Tua. Let's get Jalen Waddle back soon because this could be the best offense in the NFL. It's at least... in the conversation, I mean, we know Kansas City had a great game today and all that. You know, you get Taylor Swift in the house, you get to do some special stuff. But Mike McDaniel's a wizard, and he's got these motorcycles on the outside, and Tua is playing at such a high level. And, you know, now they have a backfield that seems like it's overflowing with talent. And we were talking about some of those guys. I'll let you take that first. You know, producer Colin was giving us some scouting tips beforehand. I'm at a point now where I'm just going to trust Mike McDaniel to put anybody who's a part of this offense. And look, I get it. If you played Berrios or Smythe today, maybe you're a little bit salty. They weren't needed. But I think Mike McDaniel can support. We thought this would be a really narrow tree, and maybe it might not be as narrow in a couple of weeks. But I think Mike McDaniel and Tua will find a way to support several guys here. This is the best offense in fantasy football. Easy to say after they score 70, but they've looked good all 3 weeks.
They've looked great all 3 weeks. And I think the biggest difference here between last year's Dolphins were a really good offense. And, you know, I think we knew they had, as long as everybody was healthy, they had some baseline of being like a top 12, top 10 type of offense. But to me, Scott, what's launched them now from top 10 type of offense to, like you said, and I'm co-signing this, the best offense in the NFL right now, is that they're running the ball like crazy. Raheem Mostert and Devon Achane, the rookie running back, who... Achane, you know, look, I'm sure he went off on countless benches. One of my friends sent me a text where he has this guy's got 64 points on his bench. And, you know, it's like, I get it. That's tough to look at. The guy had one catch and one rush attempt the previous week. It was going to be really, really difficult to pull the trigger on starting Devon Achane. I don't like how many people even started him. I have no idea. 2%? You said, I see you writing on, yeah, like 2% of people on Yahoo started Devon Achane. I mean, again,
out of desperation, surely, right? Nobody would have done it proactively.
Right. And this is the thing here. This guy goes off for 200 yards on the ground. Raheem Mostert goes off for 82 yards and 3 touchdowns. Mostert contributes in the passing game, which is not even really his thing. Achane adds two. I can't even believe this. Honestly, Scott, this box score reads something like a week 0 or week 1 college football team. Like, you know, just this running back production is absurd. And the quarterback still has 300 yards. I mean, I really, truly can't even process what I'm looking at here, which is why I sound hysterical. But the fact that Mike McDaniel has taken this offense and now added this dimension to it, the run game dimension that we're seeing here, and this is not like, obviously this level of production is not going to happen every single week, but they have been running the ball really well all throughout the course of the last two games. That's what we talked about with our Sunday Night Recap on the last podcast, is that they were starting to add this run game dimension. So the fact now that they have this on top of that passing game is just absurd, and I don't really know what more to say about it, but it's very impressive to see, and it's what makes them super dangerous now that they have this run game dimension, and not just like a sustaining run game, which is what Raheem Mostert had been doing, but now this like explosive element too. I just can't even begin to like how you get your mind around defending this offense.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned it was like a college game on Saturday. I was tweeting about that game that Patrick Mahomes and Baker Mayfield had, where Mahomes threw for over 700 yards in a regulation game and lost, and Mayfield averaged something like 18 yards of completion or something like that. He threw 7 touchdown passes, Baker Mayfield at the peak of his powers. And this is what this game feels like. I mean, both running backs get 4 touchdowns. I think Tristan Cockcroft pointed out it was as everybody would have thought, it was the best two-man backfield fantasy production in league history. I mean, I don't even know what could have been close to that. I know Tristan had a tweet about it, so go check that out. But how do we spin it forward? You know, I don't know. Is the glass half full or half empty with Mostert? Is it half empty because he's 31 and that's a dangerous age? Or is it half full because, well, it's a low mileage 31 because he hasn't been running to the ground? Now, granted, he's been hurt a lot. I know there was some talk about, we talked last week, we joked a little bit about, oh, he'll show up on the sell high list. And our great colleague Sal Vitri was talking about selling high on Mostert, which was perfectly plausible. But I think what happens in your leagues is people are like, well, I'm not going to be the sucker who takes Raheem Mostert. He's 31 years old. He's not going to last the whole season. So I almost feel like he's a forced hold because people are just going to lowball you or expect you to, oh, yeah, Achane's going to take his job away. Jeff Wilson's coming back. Yeah, you want Mostert? Okay, here's like wide receiver 43. Want to do a trade? And you're going to say, you know what? I'm just going to ride this out, even if it's just into October, whatever. Raheem Mostert's an automatic start as long as he's healthy, tied to the best offense in fantasy football. If that means it's 2 months, it's 2 months. If somehow it goes deeper than that, then fine. You're playing with house money. I think you probably have to hold on to him.
I'm with you too. I don't think you sell him. And I know, I feel like I come on the podcast and I say the same thing about Raheem Mostert every single week. And I feel like I've said it basically since like the start of last season. Raheem Mostert, he ain't here for a long time. He's here for a good time. He ain't here for a long time. Like that's the way it is with Raheem Mostert. And I want that good time, by the way, to be on my team. So I'm not trying to like cash in on him. I do think like Achane will probably, it's just crazy to say it coming off a game like this, but he will probably be extremely volatile, right? Like it's hard to even look at this and like try to spin this forward because this is so such out of the norm.
Yeah,
it's such an outlier. But and that leads me to Denver before we get off this game here, because like Russell has 300 yards in this game, you know, 1 touchdown, 1 reception. I almost don't even know what to say about Russ in this game, because when you're getting, I mean, they were down in a hurry like this. Russ is basically just like throwing water out of the boat. He's trying to bucket water out of a sinking ship at that point. But like defensively, Scott, this was the part of the Broncos when you were trying to unsubscribe from them in primetime all last year. The part about the Broncos that made them even mildly watchable last season was that their defense was aggressive, it was attacking, and it was an overall quality unit, and they have really good players over there. Like but Patrick Surtain, I see him getting, you know, trailing Chosen Anderson, I'm fresh off the practice squad in coverage, you know. I don't know, Sean Payton now 0-3, the side of the ball that was probably the side we felt like we could have counted on more, gives up 70 points to the Dolphins. I don't know what to do with the Broncos at this point.
It's really hard to unpack Denver's side of it because on one hand, any receiver you might have had to play this week, I don't think any of them were proactive plays, but Cortland Sutton gets home. Jerry Jeudy gets home. It took a kick return touchdown from Mims, but he got home and he got more snaps this week as we thought he would. So the shape of this, again, this is such an outlier game. It's hard to know what to take from it because Denver was in garbage time so quickly that you can't really take their production at face value. You might say, well, Rusher for 300, 8.1 yards per attempt. He was good. Well, they were chasing the game, and Miami at this point was like, okay, let's just not allow, you know, 4 ADR touchdowns in a row, and we're good here. I'm encouraged that Mims was playing more. I don't think any of the backs in Denver, I mean, P-Ron wasn't playable anyway, but Williams is somebody who I don't trust. I also wonder, and it feels weird to say this after Russ had a good box score game, but Sean Payton's not going to sit here and just say, oh, okay, well, we're going to stink, and maybe we'll get Caleb Williams next year. He's not going to do that. He's a competitive guy. I just wonder at some point if he just thinks, because every offensive designer thinks, well, we get the right people in there, we can fix this. I just wonder at one point if they're paying Jared Stidham a lot of money for a backup. I wonder if at what point Payton might just say, well, just see what Stidham can do. We have to, everybody's on evaluation anyway. Maybe our future quarterback is going to come in the draft next year, free agency or something like that. They're not long-term. They'll find a way to get out of the Russ contract if they have to. I just want to say one more thing. I know we've talked a lot about this game, but I have to mention this with Miami.
70 points. It's fine. We can talk about 70 points.
Well, this is going to sound, this is a really kind of obscure note, but I'll make it really quick. If you're in a super flex league, a lot of times it's worth it to roster backup quarterbacks. I'm screwed in the fishbowl. I have Burrow and Aaron Rodgers, so I'm trying to get lucky with a backup. And it's no fun to ghoul the starters and everything. I have Mike White in that league because if Tua gets hurt, and Tua's good. Tua's maybe really, really good. He's the MVP front runner right now. He was before this game, and the odds are only going to go down after this game. But this is such a captain's chair. This is such a rocket ship that anybody at the controls I'm interested in every super flex league, where any league where backups are rostered, and I realize that's a small percentage, Mike White better be on somebody's team.
Yep, I couldn't agree with that more. And I also agree with your point about Stidham. Like, I think it would be a rage benching, right? If Peyton like benched Russell Wilson or something, you know, in the fallout of this game, which I don't necessarily think is going to happen, because Russ was maybe in the list of problems for the Broncos, like the problem players, he was probably like 25th in this game. So we'll see what happens with the Broncos. I agree with your note on Mike White.
And Mims is going places, man. At least, you know, he made a couple of splash plays today, and all we wanted is him to get a bigger role. They traded up to get him, so they like him. They're in evaluation, but they know they're not going to the playoffs this year. So it's like, it's going to be like, yeah, let's get Marvin Mims on the field because he's going to be the best receiver on our next really good team.
Yeah, I think they might not have known it going into Sunday, but I think they probably know it now that they're not going places, or at least they should. Next game up here, LA Chargers 28, Minnesota Vikings 24. This was like the movable force versus the stoppable object in this game, in terms of like who's going to blow this thing at the end, right? Between these two teams, like who's going to mess this thing up? In the end, the Vikings are not able to get it done. The Chargers win this game. You know, I think this was a really big signature type game for Justin Herbert. Not saying he was perfect here, but I saw Next Gen Stats. The Vikings blitzed Justin Herbert on 40 of his 50 dropbacks. That was the second highest blitz rate in a game of the NGS era, 82%. Herbert averaged 2.26 seconds time to throw, his first game under 2.4 of his entire career. Got the ball out fast, was decisive, got the ball to the guys, you know, to Mike Williams before suffering an injury. Keenan Allen has 200 yards. I'm taking the L on Keenan Allen, thinking like he had lost a step. I take the L on that. That was rough. That was on me. And he's a player I'm more than happy to be wrong about, right? Because I just love the player so much. Like, if he's not at the age cliff, that's awesome. I'll be happy about that one. But just, I think it was a really quality game by Herbert, even if it was like a who's going to fumble the bag here at the end.
Yeah, well said. You know, for all the pressure they put on Herbert, or theoretical pressure, he sacked once. You know, it felt like they weren't even getting to him. So, but they kept trying. And I take the L on Keenan Allen too. We were sharing a mind on that one. And it's interesting. I've already written the first 1,000 words of my booms and bust piece, and I haven't mentioned Keenan Allen yet, who had an 18 catch game, and he throws a 49-yard touchdown pass to Mike Williams. But there's just nowhere to squeeze him in because all this other crazy stuff is happening. So he'll have to be in the down ballot stuff. But Keenan Allen is, you know, when you say, well, you know, okay, they're blitzing Herbert today, who does that favor? Well, the guy who gets open the quickest on the most defined route, the, you know, most reliable hands. That's obviously Keenan Allen. Williams get banged up in this game, does catch the touchdown on the gadget play. Man, Josh Kelly, last week I wanted to give him all the excuses because, yeah, you know, Tennessee, you know, Mike Vrabel, he may go 4-13, but you're not going to run on Mike Vrabel's team, you know. So I thought, okay, I'll give Josh Kelly another shot. I'm sure I told some of our listeners and readers to play him this week, and it went nowhere. This was a weird game where the game landed around the total. I think the total was in the 53 range, so 52 points were scored and there was a ton of yardage. But the problem is the touchdowns went to the – it just happens sometimes. Donald Parham had a couple of touchdowns. Josh Oliver had a touchdown. You know, at least Allen and Jefferson got there on volume. And Alexander Mattison, just to flip to Minnesota, he needed to have a statement game. He played very poorly the first 2 weeks. And look, don't be a jerk to him on social media. He's a person, yeah, and everything. But, you know, we evaluate his play. That's what we're here to talk about. Not him as a person or anything. He's a decent guy. I'm rooting for Alexander Mattison. I thought he ran really well today, and he did get involved in the passing game, which was important because they, wherever it's worth, they added Cam Akers. There's talk of maybe Ty Chandler playing a little bit more. He looked good in limited action today. Mattison needed to have a game to kind of say, okay, it's my backfield and the other guys are the complimentary guys. He had that game. Also, as a thought experiment, Matt, how many catches would T.J. Hockenson need to get to break 100 yards? I'm thinking probably like 14. You know, the eight. If I told you, what tight end went 8 for 78-0 today on 11 targets?
Oh, Hockenson.
Of course, that's T.J. That is the T.J. Hockenson. There should be a little TM next to that. And
How many of those do you think are just like Kirk Cousins getting the ball out of his hands in like the 2 minute drill too? Like at the end of the end of the second half and the end of the fourth quarter.
Just Hockenson,
the
first seven. Hockenson sitting in his own, catching the ball, you know, muscles out of one tackle and then goes down to the second guy. And it's interesting. He was traded last year. I can't wait to talk about the team that traded him and what they're doing at tight end, because I think they might have the number one dynasty tight end in football right now. But yes, somehow the NFL couldn't have a way for both the Chargers and the Vikings to lose this game. You know, a crazy Staley decision to go for it late on. I know on 4th-and-1, some of the advanced metrics might say you should go for it all the time, never punt. But it seemed like they were giving the Vikings a short field, giving the Vikings the game, and the Minnesota said, nah, we don't want it. And they made Minnesota just waste a bunch of time at the end of this game, too. Here's the bottom line. The Chargers are who we thought they were. The Vikings are who we thought they were. And I have cold feet now on Josh Kelly going forward, and I feel a little bit better about Alexander Mattison after today.
Panthers, Chiefs, Bears, next three games for the Vikings. Those are pretty gettable matchups, Kansas City notwithstanding, but definitely Carolina and Chicago. Those are pretty gettable matchups for Alexander Mattison if he can continue to hold on to the job. There were some rocky moments still in this game, but overall I thought he was a sustaining runner. He made guys miss a little bit more, and like he just executed the assignment, which is what they need him to be. Want to quickly flip to Mike Williams here. MRIs tomorrow for him, so you might know by the time you're listening to this. Initial fears are not good for Mike Williams. We've really seen like almost nothing out of Quentin Johnston so far. You know, they're a rookie first round pick. He has 2 catches for 10 yards in this game. Josh Palmer did have 4 for 66 and a touchdown, lost a fumble. Also, his touchdown kind of was batted up, you know, by the Minnesota defensive back. So not sure how much I'm giving Josh Palmer credit on that, although he was certainly willing to celebrate afterwards. This is the fear I think I have with the Chargers offense, is that if Quentin Johnston is not ready to rock, and he was a player that I didn't think was going to be ready to rock from day one, and so far that's proved to be true, we're going to start to get back into the same areas we were with the Chargers pass game last year. But I will say this year, if Keenan Allen is healthy and he's playing like the Keenan Allen we see right now, maybe my fears aren't going to be quite so bad if Keenan Allen's playing this way. Next game up here, Packers 18, Saints 17. The big one, big note here, Saints lose this game. They also lose Derek Carr. Now, I saw Ian Rappaport report that initial fears actually weren't met with the medical diagnosis afterwards. It actually seems like he's dodged a season-ending injury, has Derek Carr, which is really good to see. Scott, I know that people will be, and I'm curious what you think about this. I know people will be excited about Jameis Winston taking over this team because he's like aggressive, he's kind of a meme quarterback, but I think Winston if he's still the player that like last we remember Jameis Winston, and I have no reason to think he's not, I think he's kind of a terrible fit for this team. Even if he's like a quality backup quarterback, they have intriguing offensive pieces. Obviously, Chris Olave is a superstar, fantastic catch today. Michael Thomas has looked good as a possession receiver. Rashid Shaheed makes one big play per game mandatory. They have Alvin Kamara coming back next week, so the run game will be probably be a little bit better than it has been. But this is like a defense first team, right? Like Dennis Allen has this defense playing really well. Nobody scored more than 20 points. It's not been a great schedule so far, but nobody scored more than 20 points on the Saints. A guy like Winston, who's going to give the other team chances to get back in the game, I actually think is a kind of a weirdly bad fit for the Saints as currently constructed. But I think from a fantasy perspective, he might obviously juice up the attempts for the current Saints offense.
It's interesting. If Winston does have to play, I seem to remember when he first played for New Orleans, and I think maybe Sean Payton might have still been there, that they'd deprogrammed Winston a little bit, and they'd made him check down a lot, and he was not throwing interceptions, but he wasn't throwing the YOLO balls either. I admit, from a fan perspective, from a fantasy perspective, I'd love to see deep drops, just chuck it to Chris Olave, and let's watch him go. Yeah, get a little Shaheed here, give a little bit to Thomas there. Let's have fun. Alvin Kamara is scheduled to come back next week, so that could be fun. And I think the hidden story here is that Derek Carr, nobody wants to talk about this. Derek Carr, and I realize the stats aren't everything, he had worse efficiency metrics last year than Andy Dalton. He had a really bad season. I know Carr was okay in this game, although as you mentioned, the Saints haven't done anything special on offense for three games. They've had a bad run out without Kamara. They lost Williams for whatever that's worth in the second game. A lot of the stuff I thought might happen today didn't happen. I thought this would maybe be a Taysom Hill game. He wasn't used a lot. Jimmy Graham, of all people, a classic. He's still in the league touchdown. A lot of backup tight end scoring this week. I guess it's open to interpretation of what player Winston might be. I just don't think Carr's I think Carr is maybe at best average right now. I think he may even be below average. I get really spooked by that last season he had with the Raiders, and that was with Devontae Adams still playing at an awfully high level. So I don't think they lose that much with Winston. But again, it's do we get the Tampa Bay YOLO Winston, or do we get right. The, oh no, we're going to play Saints ball Winston? Because I think he was a different guy the last time he was a regular starter.
No, that's fair. I think we still kind of just need to see who Jameis Winston is at this point. I think I think Dennis Allen soured on Jameis Winston last year because he kind of started to get back into some of that like pushing the ball stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's why they played Andy Dalton like all season long. Green Bay on the other side, I still see like some encouraging signs from Jordan Love, but I'm not like totally all the way in on this offense. But I do have to keep reminding myself that we still haven't seen them with their most explosive receiver in Christian mm-hmm. Watson. And like that offense is just totally different with A.J. Dillon at the helm and not Aaron Jones in the mix.
A.J. Dillon, who I was asked a lot of A.J. Dillon questions today, and some people just had the depth to bench him. Some people didn't have the the depth they had to play him. And A.J. Dillon needs touchdown deodorant. Again, if I told you, Matt, okay, running back, he went 11 for 33 and he didn't have a catch. You'd be like, oh yeah, sounds like A.J. Dillon's music. You know, did he score a touchdown? Did he bail you out with it? No, he didn't score a touchdown. Jordan Love scored the touchdown. Okay, that's it. That's who A.J. Dillon is. He's just a guy. And you know, three games without Watson. I know he was close to playing this week, maybe next week. At least Love pulled this game out. I thought he played very poorly for three quarters. Give the Saints defense a lot of credit for that. But Jordan Love doesn't have the two most impactful guys that he needs. And I'm great. Christian Watson's only a second year player too, but just this is such a young team with the receivers, right? Just so many second year guys and first year guys and some journeymen getting into the game and stuff. I don't want to say too many negative things about Jordan Love, who I think has played reasonably solid so far, until he has a chance to play with his two best pieces, because they're not on the field right now. So the fact that they're 2-1, they could have easily won the Atlanta game. I think they're a solid, LaFleur's a good coach. I think Love is going to be a good professional quarterback. It's just really hard to step into those shoes, Favre, Rodgers. But before the season, I wasn't sure if Love was any kind of an extended answer. Now I think that even though today wasn't a great game, I think he'll be here. You know, he's going to be the quarterback for the foreseeable future. And I didn't feel comfortable saying that a month ago.
Next game up here, Houston Texans 37, Jacksonville Jaguars 17. Scott, it is very troubling for the Jacksonville Jaguars that CJ Stroud behind a makeshift offensive line. They have cluster injuries at the offensive line and in the secondary. CJ Stroud sacked zero times. And then on the other side of it, Trevor Lawrence has it. I know passer rating is not everything, but an 85.3 passer rating throwing against that secondary that just put its top cornerback on IR, has other injuries back there. Jags are 1-2 now, and I don't really know who the Jacksonville Jaguars are. They feel like an identity-free team. All the things I thought about them have basically gone to the wayside. I don't know. Where are we at with Jaguars, like players in fantasy and just in general right now?
That's a great question to which I have no effective answer. There were so many victory laps after week one. Trevor Lawrence going to the moon. Oh, all you idiots who were afraid to draft Calvin Ridley. He's fine. He dominated the Colts. Well, he dominated them for half. He didn't do anything in the second half. And the Chiefs, okay, maybe they just caught the Chiefs at the wrong time. The Chiefs were rested. They got Chris Jones back. They needed the game like blood. What's your excuse against the Houston Texans? And look, there's a lot of things about Houston I like, but they're a team. They're a bad team on the rise to being competitive, right? You shouldn't lose at home to Houston by 20. And you got pushed around. As you mentioned, they didn't put a hand on CJ Stroud. No sacks, no turnovers. That's embarrassing. And I don't know what's wrong with Lawrence, man. I don't understand. I mean, look, Zay Jones is a good player. Your offense shouldn't collapse when Zay Jones is off the field. Last week, it was all the touchdowns that were, 2 inches out, a foot out, a couple of toes out. They were so close to having monster games last week with Jones, with Ridley, with Lawrence. I give them a big pass. I feel lucky I didn't use them in Survivor this week. A lot of people did. It was a very bloody Survivor week. Of course, Dallas loses. We'll talk about that later. But sorry about that, Colin. Producer Colin, big Cowboys fan. But, maybe I just want to focus on the good stuff. But CJ Stroud.
I'm fine with that.
You've got number one in the draft. If I'm Carolina, Carolina fan, I think Bryce Young's a good player and he's going to have a long career. And I think he's going to stand up as a first round pick. But the fact that Stroud has all this bubblegum and barbed wire in front of him and he looks poised, he's not dropping his eyes towards the rush. And look, I like Tank Dell. I like Nico Collins. Robert Woods still has a little bit left to give us. Maybe John Metchie will be a factor at some point. But it's not like CJ Stroud is throwing to Olave and Garrett Wilson and Marvin Harrison Jr. and all that stuff. I mean, he's making it work with a very ordinary set of pieces. So I feel very confident. I had to start Tank Dell on some seams this week, and he came through with a big game. He wasn't covering his touchdown, but it's just funny. That's a big play. You think of Tank Dell's winning underneath, but he's a part of this offense. I know Nico didn't have a great game, and they only had to throw 30 passes because they were ahead. I feel very comfortable that Houston is going to get Pierce going. Singletary was more involved today than I thought. Maybe the running game will come around when the offensive line gets healthy. Houston's going to outkick their ADPs. And there's a lot of, they're not league winners, but they're going to embellish your roster. They're going to step you up. A lot of guys like Nico, quiet game aside, he's, you drafted him as a 4, maybe he's a 3. Maybe you picked up Tank Dell, maybe you can start him as a flex now, stuff like that. A lot of guys are going to outkick their ADP coverage. I wish I had a better ticket. I'm going to watch the Jacksonville, the last two games. I'm going to watch both of them Monday or Tuesday and try to figure out what's going on. Of course, things are broken, teams fix it. So that's why a lot of times when I rewatch games, I try to keep in mind, the problems that I'm going to see as a reasonably intelligent person, I'm not an offensive coordinator, they're going to see that stuff too. They're going to try to fix it. There's just too much talent here for me to think that Jacksonville won't fix it. Everything I saw last year from Lawrence, I thought screamed out that he was legit. And Calvin Ridley certainly looked like he was legit in week one. So my thought would be that Jacksonville will figure it out. But there was nothing about the Houston defense that should have been a problem.
It remains an underrated and kind of under-discussed storyline that Doug Peterson gave up the play calling duties to Press Taylor. And there are some Eagles fans that will tell you he tried to do this in Philadelphia too. Like he tried to make Press Taylor a thing. And look, it's great when these older coaches try to prop up the younger guys. Not that Doug Peterson's an old dude, he's about to retire, but this is his second time as a head coaching gig. Like Press Taylor has followed him around. Obviously there's the trees all over the place, right? Like he spent some time in Indianapolis under Nick Sirianni, who, there's a lot of connective tissue with all this stuff. Anyways, I say all that to say that it was underrated that in the preseason it was announced that, Press Taylor was going to take over the play calling duties. He's the offensive coordinator. And I can definitely see a world, Scott, where week 6, week 5, we get the headlines. Doug Peterson has taken back the play calling duties, or you start to see Doug, you know, with the play sheet more and more during games. Like, people have started talking about that with Brian Daboll now at this point. Like, is he calling plays instead of Mike Kafka? Not that that's going well for the Giants right now, but I can see that happening. And then, like, oh, maybe this offense gets right then. Because you're right, I don't have a good answer for what's going on with Jacksonville right now. Like, on a team level, they don't rush the passer and they don't really protect their quarterback that well. That's two ways that your team's going to underperform if you do that stuff. But from a fantasy angle, the fact that they're not really like they're not given a lot of pushback, right? You know, Houston has them kind of on the ropes the entire day. They score 17 points. Kansas City kind of has them on the ropes the entire game in week two, and they scored 9 points. And even though Calvin Ridley kind of went crazy against the Colts, I think we know through 3 weeks that you can go crazy on the Colts cornerbacks. Like, mm-hmm. that's a weak spot. So I don't really know what the answer is for Jacksonville, but I do think it's one of the biggest outstanding questions in the entire NFL right now. And I will also just wrap things up with a positive note on Houston. I think you're kind of almost like underrating the Texans just a little bit. Like, I think Nico, again, quiet game here, but I think he's probably a low end too as a wide receiver. I think Tank Dell is absolutely on the flex radar. And for CJ Stroud, who is definitely the guy, like, I wanted the Panthers to take number one overall. And again, maybe Bryce Young turns into a good player. But the thing with Stroud right now is I think he's already answered some of the biggest questions that people had about him as a prospect. One, can he process information? The S2 test. I can't wait to hear how Dalton, you know, bangs on the S2 test for like the fifth straight week on the podcast here on Thursday. But, you know, more importantly, he's playing under pressure. He's playing in advantageous circumstances, which were two things that people had legit questions. Like, can he play off script with CJ Stroud? And he's already answered those. Whereas with Bryce Young, he's not really answered any of the questions so far. And it's so early in these guys' career. I'm not like, you know, we're not calling the match right now. But the fact that it looks this encouraging for CJ Stroud is really good.
I'll close with 2 points. One, I mentioned the no sacks. Offensive lines have something to do with sacks, but sacks are generally more of a quarterback stat than they are an offensive line. So people say, oh, David Carr had no chance. You know, he gets sacked a million times. Sacks are more about the quarterback. Yeah, some jailbreaks are unavoidable, but every blitz has an indicator and you can move protections and there's a hot read and all that stuff. And the fact that they're not sacking a rookie quarterback, which every defensive coordinator in the league wants to play against rookies and make their life miserable. You know, I mean, Bill Belichick finally found a quarterback he could beat today. That says so much about Stroud doing the things that you said you wanted to see and some of the things you weren't sure about, even though you did like him number one overall. So that's such a great sign. Travis Etienne didn't get the touchdown, but I thought he looked very good today. And more importantly, 5 targets, 4 catches, right? Travis Etienne, the big thing with him was, okay, he's going to get touches. Is he going to get the high value touches, right? Mm-hmm. As Ben Gretsch would say, is he going to get the goal line work? Is he going to get the hurry up work? Is he going to get the passing down work? And he's at least getting the second thing. Yeah. And yet Dick Bigsby punches it in fine. But Etienne was somebody who was a fade for me because I was worried that he was going to lose both of those things. Now I'm like, well, they're going to use him in the passing game. He'll eventually fall in the end zone a few times. I think Etienne is actually going to be just fine.
All right, next game up here, Detroit Lions 20, Atlanta Falcons 6. Really encouraging for the Lions that, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown is a big game. While he's not 100% healthy, that's great. That's pretty standard. But their two rookies step up here, Scott. You know, I had definitely thought that, hey, there was going to be a chance that Jahmyr Gibbs just doesn't take over a ton of work and like Craig Reynolds gets in the mix. That was wrong. Jahmyr Gibbs carried the ball 17 times for 80 yards. He only had a long run of 21 yards. Like you could see the Lions offensive line is a really good unit. They blow open holes and Jahmyr Gibbs just executed the plays, which I think is a really good sign for a rookie running back that they were still kind of trying to figure out. And then Sam Laporta has an incredible game. I know you've got a lot of points on Laporta and I'm excited to hear the enthusiasm here. Andy Behrens must have been wasted by like 2 p.m. Eastern. You know, Sam Laporta was on such a hot streak there. And on the flip side, too, I think the Lions defense, I know they just are coming off like getting drubbed a little bit by the Seahawks last week, but their run defense is good. Atlanta's vaunted rushing attack here, you know, sub 50 yards between the two running backs, Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier. 3.3 yards per carry for Bijan, 1.7 for Tyler Allgeier. So really just good all around W for the Lions. I think they're showing themselves to be more of a complete team. I mean, I haven't even mentioned Jared Goff yet. And like, I feel like nobody wants to talk about how well, I mean, I know he threw one interception, whatever. He's playing pretty good football right now. And really kind of nobody wants to talk about it. But the two rookies stepping up on the offensive side of the football for Detroit, I think, continues to be a big encouraging sign.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see them play at Green Bay on Thursday, an outdoor game. Goff generally doesn't play as well on the road. A lot of guys have home road splits like that, but, you know, outdoor, Green Bay is a team I respect. Let's start with the good stuff. For one thing, Sam LaPorta just had, this is kind of a made up, you know, like drive through stat, but I'll throw it out anyway. He's had the best 3-game rookie push off of any tight end. When I did a stat head query, he has the most PPR points of any rookie tight end in his first 3 games. Now, what have we been screaming for like the last 10, 15, 20 years? You can't draft rookie tight ends. You can't trust them. You know, they're not going to be on the field. They don't understand the game. It's complicated, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, even some guys, maybe you can trust the Dalton Kincaid because he's more of a flex. He's more of a slot receiver and he's not going to block, whatever. LaPorta is a Gronkowski type, a Kelsey type. I mean, he's going to throw his weight around, and I like that he wears 87 like those guys did. This may sound kind of like hot take-ish, but I don't care. You're in a keeper league, a dynasty league. I'd rather have Matt LaPorta right now. If you're not going to win this year, because if you're going to win this year, it changes the calculus a little bit. I think his dynasty stock is the highest at the tight end position of anybody.
That's spicy, but I really like it because, as you mentioned, rookie tight ends getting off to a start like this is just basically unheard of. 5 catches in back-to-back games to start his career. Then he has this game where he goes 8 for 84 and a touchdown. And I love, by the way, I love that he wears a number in the 80s too. Like, that's classic stuff. Love that.
He wears a great tight end number. You know, look, they get him downfield. They scheme him downfield for the touchdown. The coverage was terrible. But I like that they're looking to make splash plays with him. And if you watch LaPorta, the first 2 games, he's just dump trucking people. He's running all over guys. I mean, doesn't he remind you a lot of Kittle? Because I see the same. And, you know, I know they went to Iowa, so it's like the easiest comp in the world to make. But it's funny because Hockenson went to Iowa too, and he's not at all like these guys. I like Hockenson for what he is, and he's important. And you need 7 catches for 65 yards. TJ Hockenson's here for you. But LaPorta, just like when Kittle popped, a tight end, when they explode, it gets your blood pumping. So this is obviously a kind of a universal fantasy take. I don't really know how you sort it out because whoever has LaPorta in your league doesn't want to trade him. But if you're in a keeper league, if they're not offering the moon, if it's not an obvious yes for LaPorta, I would just say no. I just could not be more over the moon for this kid. You mentioned Gibbs. So Montgomery gets hurt. He's out multiple weeks. We've seen them go with backfield platoons, with, you know, inside and outside guys. They dress Reynolds at night. They both play. They both get carries, but it only amounts to 7 carries collectively, and Gibbs gets 17. That's all we needed to see, because it would have been very easy in a game that Lions were comfortably ahead. They could have very easily given 7-8 garbage carries to Knight, 7-8 garbage carries to Reynolds. They didn't do that. Those guys hardly played. I did have some Reynolds and some Bam Knight in deeper leagues on my bench just to see if anything popped. If they found a 10 to 12, 13 touch role, because it has fantasy currency, especially if they'd get the goal line work. But no, they said, Gibbs, it's your job, man. Those guys are secondary guys. You're the man, and we'll run some of the inside stuff that we would have run to Montgomery. So that's all the stuff you wanted to see. I don't know what happened, if there was an injury or just he got schemed out or he was covered, but I did tell a lot of people to play Josh Reynolds today. And Josh Reynolds, a big fat bagel, no touches, no targets, no catches. So that didn't come up. Now, granted, it wasn't a game where Detroit had to chase it, but still, I mean, other people got home. St. Brown was fine. LaPorta was great. Khalif Raymond made a couple of plays. So I guess Josh Reynolds is out of the circle of trust. The best thing I can tell you about the Falcons, if you're frustrated by how granted, they get outplayed. They only had like 17, 18 snaps in the first half, and that's on them. If you're not maintaining offense, if you're not moving the chains, then you don't hold the ball. That's how football works. But if you're frustrated by how they handle their distribution, you need them to lose a game, because when they win, they get empowered and they think, okay, what we're doing is working. At least when you lose and get your tails kicked, as you said, the Detroit defense was tremendous. How did Aiden Hutchinson not go first in that draft? I'll never understand that. But it's not just him. They've built a
What really, do we just talk about with the Jags, too? Like, they can't pressure the passer.
Man, wouldn't they love him? It's just nice to see. Yeah, I'm a transplant to the Michigan area, and I people are nicer when the Lions are good. It's just nice to see something good happen, like Aiden Hutchinson fall on their lap when they shouldn't have been able to draft him. A local guy, you know, he went to Michigan and all that stuff. He's got such a high motor. But at least the Falcons have to look in the mirror now. Arthur Smith has to ask himself, what kind of offense are we running here? And granted, you might say, well, we want to throw the ball. We can't throw downfield routes when Desmond Ridder's getting sacked seven times. And yeah. And how many of those sacks are on the line? How many of those sacks are on Ridder? You know, communication. Yeah, for sure. A little bit of both. But, man, I have Drake London shares, and I don't – it's at the point now, like, Drake London is a little bit like the NFC's version of Garrett Wilson, where if you gave me a really low projection, like, okay, would you like to lock in five catches for 63 yards now or play the game out? I'm like, give me the five for 63. I'll take it. Yeah. Fine. Done. God. That's where I'm at with Garrett Wilson, too. It's like – he's terrific, and so is Drake London. It's just – I just think it's the round peg in the square hole.
All right, let's move on to the next game here. Indianapolis Colts 22, Baltimore Ravens 19 in overtime. This game, I mean, it was interesting back and forth game, kind of a weird game that goes so deep into overtime. You know, as expected, Gardner Minshew kind of runs the offense a little bit. Zach Moss continues to be like one of the best fantasy pickups, early on this year. We'll see what happens if and when Jonathan Taylor gets back, but 30 carries for Zach Moss, 5 for Trey Sermon. 5 for 17 yards, of course, goes over 100 yards to Zach Moss, scores a touchdown through the air, a really nice receiving play, which was like not Zach Moss's resume. But I want to just talk about the Ravens here real quick, Scott. Let me just read you off the current injuries that the Baltimore Ravens are dealing with. And this is going to take a second. Offense: J.K. Dobbins, running back; Justice Hill, running back; Gus Edwards, running back; Keaton Mitchell, running back; wide receiver Odell Beckham; wide receiver Rashad Bateman, who picked up a hamstring injury today; wide receiver Tylan Wallace; center Tyler Linderbaum; guard Andrew Voorhees; left tackle Ronnie Stanley; defense, that's just one side of the ball, defense Marlon Humphrey; cornerback Damarian Williams; cornerback Trayvon Mullen; safety Marcus Williams; safety Adarius Washington; Odafe Owe, linebacker; linebacker David Ajabo, you know, pass rusher; Malik Ham, linebacker; linebacker Tyus Bowser. I'm reading off a tweet, by the way, at Live Raven Nation. Shout out to those folks for putting together this very sad tweet. I mean, this team is incredibly banged up here in week three that, like, they're almost at an unrecognizable point.
Yeah, after a year where they had very bad injury luck last year, a lot of the pro Raven stuff was like, well, okay, they can't possibly run out as bad as they did last year. And now it's probably worse. I missed the Edwards injury, and I was wondering why there was so much Melvin Gordon on my screen, which was, look, Melvin Gordon's had a nice career, but I was resolved that I didn't need any more Melvin Gordon in my life. And then there he was getting 3 yards a carry, encouraging
3.2.
Yeah, 3.2.
Give him the
wanna
two.
Want to be fair. Yeah. If I get a 3.2 for a semester, I'd want to be on the dean's list, right? Lamar Jackson finally gets back in the end zone on the ground, but it's out of necessity, right? Because Gus wasn't available. And what are you going to do? Hand it off to Melvin Gordon? Too much of the passing, I thought, was horizontal for Baltimore. I want to see more downfield shots. But again, as you said, if you don't trust your offensive line, maybe, or if you're missing, you have cluster injuries, it just makes it hard to run the offense that you want. A guy that you got right that I didn't get right is Michael Pittman. I was just nervous that I know Richardson didn't play today, but I was just worried that Richardson was so raw. He hardly played at Florida. Could he support Pittman, who I still think was drafted somewhat optimistically? And I was just nervous that, man, I flipped on it. I was somebody, a friend of mine sent me his roster like a week ago, and he was trying to figure out if like Dotson or Pittman was higher on his depth chart. I said, well, you know, before the season, I would have told you Dotson was pushing him and maybe was ahead of him. Now it has to be Pittman. And that gets backed up today. The Colts are one of the few teams that has a backup quarterback, but the team doesn't go totally kablooey. I mean, Minshew is meant to be the number two. He's not going to take the job or anything, but they made the right hire. I think they drafted the right quarterback. And Zach Moss, who I don't think I have any shares of, I tried to get him. I should have been a week earlier on that, and I wasn't proactive. And he looks good, man. He even got a little bit involved really in the passing game, which you generally don't think of with Zach Moss. He had almost all the carries to himself. Obviously, Trey Sermon isn't going to get in his way. And I talked about like the Falcons like needing to look at themselves in the mirror after they lose a game, although they're still 2-1. The Colts are 2-1 now. They have a bad relationship with Jonathan Taylor, and it's frustrating and everything. I don't think they're in a hurry to patch that up. I think, like, you know what? We're doing just fine. Zach Moss isn't a superstar, but he's good. He's here. He's healthy. He's under contract. We're going to play with the guys we have. And I think Steichen's doing a hell of a job. I mean, they've had to play with both of their quarterbacks. I like what the Colts – I'm buying what the Colts are selling right now.
If I was a Colts fan, I'd feel great. I'd feel great about the direction of the team. And, yeah, there should be a situation where it's like, okay, Jonathan, like, come on in here. Like, you should want to be a part of this. You should want to be a part of this and have a prove it season. And we'll give you a big contract at the end of the year if the vibes are really good between you and the rest of the team. So I'm with you. But Zach Moss looks really good in this offense. All right. Had a lot of games in the headliner section because there were just a lot of really good and really interesting games. A lot of takeaways there. But let's take a quick break. We'll re-rack. We'll talk about the rest of the games from Sunday here. All right, talk about two teams that live in the rest section at this point. New England Patriots 15, New York Jets 10. Scott, the Jets just make me sad, bro. Like, it just, they're living in like a time machine. It's like we're right back in 2022. This felt like a 2022 Jets game, as if like the last, you know, 12 months of time and the Aaron Rodgers stuff just never happened for this team.
It's just so sad. Garrett Wilson's talented, and I feel like I'm moving him down and moving him down every week, and I feel like I'm behind on that. Breece Hall got bottled up today. Dalvin Cook went nowhere. If you want to bench all of your Jets, and I realize that's really just a referendum on Wilson and Hall right now, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, because Zach Wilson, you can't play the way he does and sustain offense. And on the Patriots side, Ramondre Stevenson, I'm going to defend him till the cows come home, but they found a lot for Zeke Elliott to do. He had 17 touches. I thought Hunter Henry was somebody we could trust, and, you know, all tight ends are going to have some quiet games, but he does just about nothing. The touchdown goes to Farrah Brown of all things. This was a 15-10 game, where if you told me the final score was 2-0 and the Patriots won on that late safety, I'm like, yeah, it sounds about right. This felt like a 2-0 game. The Patriots had a huge edge at halftime in yardage, but here's the bottom line. You're still playing Stevenson if you have him. If you have a team that's so deep that you don't need to play Stevenson, well, go enjoy your great life, because you don't even need our help. Everybody else is, I'll see what the rest of my roster looks like. I'll see how the practice week goes. I'll see who I get in fab. There's no other automatic place here. It's not Henry. And it's right now, it's not Garrett Wilson. It's not Breece Hall. I hate saying that, but that's just where we are right now.
Sometimes, like, going into a season, you know there's going to be a weak point in a roster, like a nightmare potential. And it was the Jets offensive line, right? Like, Rodgers has hurt four plays into his Jets career, and they put left tackle Dwayne Brown, who was, you know, pushing 40. They put him on IR. They're moving Mekhi Becton from right to left. They're moving Elijah Vera Tucker out to right tackle. It's just a nightmare situation for the Jets. All right, next game up here, Cleveland Browns 27, Tennessee Titans 3. Scott, you know, obviously Deshaun Watson has a nice game here, but the story of the Browns is this defense is just, it's one of the best units in the NFL right now.
Tennessee's offense has problems. We all know that. They had 6 first downs. They had 94 yards of offense. That's like first quarter stats. That's like first half stats. That's not a game. It was just ridiculous. You know, Derrick Henry was in negative yardage for most of the day. Hopkins, you know, had to huff and puff just to get to 348. On the flip side, I know a lot of people are going to be like, well, what's going on with Jerome Ford? I mean, I love the touchdown deodorant. He caught one. He ran one in. But what's with 10 for 18 on the ground? What's with a bunch of other guys carrying the ball? You understand that Mike Vrabel, he just wants everybody to get stuffed on the ground against the Titans. They make sure you don't run on them. This was a setup game. And Cleveland, to their credit, and I know, and I was there with everybody else. Everybody else had a laugh, and me too, about that horrible play Deshaun Watson made. This actually was a good game for Watson otherwise, and Cleveland came out with a proactive. They threw a bunch of passes, 20-plus passes in the first half. They said, okay, you want to stop the run? You know what? We're going to throw it. And other than that one horrible play Watson made, he actually was pretty good. You know, Cooper looks like he's going to easily pay back. He's ADP. I know the catches didn't go anywhere, but Elijah Moore caught all 9 of his targets. At least that's, you know, something to grow on. But this defense, man, this is – now, it's interesting. Cleveland plays Baltimore at home. They get their bye week. And they play San Francisco. So this isn't beating up on Ryan Tannehill. This is Lamar Jackson. This is Kyle Shanahan and all the Niners toys. So this is a really good litmus test of just how good this Cleveland defense is. But I'll tell you what, any week you're trying to break ties on guys, you're going to play McCaffrey and Lamar Jackson and Mark Andrews. That's already decided. But anybody you're not sure of, you see Cleveland on the schedule, you run far away, man. I mean, in retrospect, we could have gotten to benching Hopkins here, you know, or –
oh, yeah.
You're not going to bench Derrick Henry. The running back position just isn't that deep. But I think Hopkins was probably with a practice week was a little bit sketchy, too. In retrospect, I think you probably could have benched him for this game. Cleveland's defense, I think, is the best in the unit in the NFL right now.
I mean, I think they got to be up there with San Francisco. Obviously, San Francisco has got to be discussed there. But they've been a nightmare to deal with. so far. Man, just such an impressive unit. I want to see Cleveland's offense in in a better spot, like from a pass game matchup, right? Because that secondary intent, it's just such a funnel defense, right? You can't run on them, but you can throw on them. Last thing on this game, Scott, is there any reason to roster Treylon Burks or Chig Okonkwo at all at this point?
Very sadly, I say no.
I think I'm with you. Next game up here, Buffalo Bills put a beat down on the Washington Commanders 37-3. I had a lot of good vibes about Sam Howell going into this game. I think they should, you know, they shouldn't get like a quick trigger finger here and bench Sam Howell for, you know, Jacoby Brissett or anything like that. They should let him go through some growing pains, but four picks in this one. And, you know, just their offense never stood a chance in this game.
Four picks and nine sacks. It's hard to get sacked. Brutal. Nine times. Brutal. I think I said last week, I said, find somebody who will hold you long enough. Hold you as long as Sam Howell holds the ball in the pocket. I mean, he's athletic and he's a playmaker and he wants to give every passing play a chance. And what happens is you end up going down with the ship a lot and you can't do that. And against the Buffalo defense, it's nice. It's not the Browns. It's not the Niners. It's not, I know they didn't play that well today, but it's not the Dallas defense, you know? I think this is mostly just Howell not being ready, but, or not being developed, but they don't have any choice. They have to play him and see what he is. You know, a little bit undersized. He's a good athlete, not a great athlete. And sadly, you're getting, I mean, you know, Dotson 2 for 21, McLaurin nothing. 6 for 41. You know, Robinson, I've been getting some guff for telling people to play Brian Robinson. He had 10 carries for 70 yards and a high success rate. It's not his fault his quarterback gave the game away. You know, Brian Robinson is fine.
Zip it. You're complaining about Brian Robinson. Zip it. Okay, quarterback throws four picks and this guy gets 10 carries. He takes him for 70 yards. Pipe down.
This is funny. We talked about like guessing lines blind. James Cook had the James Cook game. Yeah, 15 for 98. Yeah. And let's make sure Latavius Murray, who I think played in the league when the AFL and NFL merged. You know, I think Latavius Murray was in his rookie season that year. He's just going to outlive all of us. He scores a touchdown. Gabe Davis has – I benched Gabe Davis on one of my teams. He scored because of the weather, and he was kind of a fringe player for me anyway. He scores the early touchdown. I'm like, I'm killing – I'm beating myself up over it, and he doesn't do anything the rest of the game. It turned out to be the right call. Is Buffalo – is it just at the point where it's like, Josh Allen, James Cook, Stephon Diggs, and then everybody else is, you kind of need to be desperate to play them? I don't see anybody else we can hang our hat on, which just feels weird to say because I've just been programmed to think, Buffalo, they're carnival. Buffalo, they're fun. Buffalo, they have five or six. You know, I think the last time I did power rankings last year at the beginning of the year, they're my number one team. I would never say that now. Not that they're bad. It's just all really about three guys.
They're a really good offense, and this is a really good defense that they played here today. You know, Washington is that defense gets after you. They'll rush the passer, and just overall really quality unit that they've got there in Washington. But I'm with you that I think everybody other than Steph Diggs and at least James Cook has graduated like to that. Like it used to just be Josh Allen and Steph Diggs, and that was it. But now at least we've got James Cook. You know, Gabe Davis is still, I think, a very boom or bust wide receiver three. Like some days he's going to get you 1 for 35 and there's not going to be a touchdown on the other side of it. You know, that is within his range of outcomes. But I think guys like Gabe, I think, you know, Trent Sherfield, Deonte Hardy, you know, Dawson, not both the tight ends really. These guys are good enough to keep the floor and the ceiling afloat for Josh Allen, but none of them are like standalone starters. I love your point, by the way, just about the backfield. James Cook, you know, 15 for 98 on the ground. Latavius Murray and Damien Harris have the exact same line. 5 for 15, 3 yards a carry, a long run of 7 yards. It's just Murray that pops in the touchdown. So they're a very funny backfield right now. All right, next game up here, Seattle Seahawks 37, Carolina Panthers 27. I don't love that this offense looked a little bit better with Andy Dalton under center in Carolina. But, you know, again, I'm not writing the script for Bryce Young yet. Just not the best start to his career. But, you know, we're spoiled by young quarterback play. Most rookie quarterbacks are not good. So Andy Dalton has like a respectable performance. He didn't come in here, tear it up or anything, but he did have a very productive passing day. Adam Thielen, 11 catches for 145 yards and a touchdown. Shout out to you if you had that one. But yeah, I don't know. This game kind of went as expected, although I think Carolina was a little more competitive than maybe I gave them credit for going in.
I know the trades you want to will into existence so infrequently happen, but Andy Dalton would be Joe Namath and the Jets. I mean, so my Garrett Wilson shares would be, I'd talk myself into that so quickly because he wasn't that bad in New Orleans. And today, very Daltonish game, right? I mean, the volume got him to 361 and two. He only averaged 6.2 yards an attempt. He took up three sacks, which is about what you expect from Andy Dalton. He knew where his bread was buttered. He threw 14 targets at Thielen. So Thielen had a washout game week one, a solid game week two, and then this week he was great. So he's had all the porridge. But this speaks to Andy Dalton's like, okay, I'm taking over. What do I got? I got Adam Thielen, you know, winning on 7-8 yard out routes. I can throw that. I can, you know, we can get that going pretty quickly. So they did it. And it's, you know, this is obviously the best game Thielen's going to have all season. I think we all agree on that. And 33-year-old receivers are not a repeatable business model, but okay. And you Chark got 11 targets, didn't do a lot with them. This felt like to me, to use a phrase you use sometimes, I thought Seattle was almost like kind of playing with their food, you know?
Yeah.
They got the game. They got ahead. You know, Carolina hung around. Seattle got ahead. Don't lose the game. You know, Charbonnet got his 9 carries. You know, Walker was good, scored a couple more touchdowns. They took a couple of deep shots. Geno missed a couple of the deep shots that he was hitting in the Detroit game. You know, Seattle is what they are. They're a 9-8, a 10-7 team, maybe 8-9 if they get a bad run out. I still feel good about Lockett and Metcalf any week I play him, even though I know today they didn't, you know, Metcalf had the yardage. Lockett didn't get there. Lockett has a bunch of almost touchdowns. I feel like he's ready to pop at any point. They had a rogue touchdown to Jake Bobo, which helps nobody. Seattle's just a solid football team. And Carolina, man, Adam Thielen's one of those guys. I feel like he's going to probably be on waiver wires like in November. Just, I'm going to enjoy it while it's happening.
Next game up here. One of the biggest surprises of the week, Arizona Cardinals 28, Dallas Cowboys 16. I hate to be, you know, sports talk radio-y or first take-y or whatever, mm-hmm. but like, didn't it just feel like the Cowboys were due for a game like this? You know, everybody's like talking, man, Cowboys, best team in the NFC. Are they better than the Niners? Are they better than the Eagles? You know, I even my dumbass is on this podcast like, maybe we all owe Mike McCarthy an apology. They lose to the Arizona Cardinals. To the Cardinals' credit, mm-hmm. Josh Dobbs, I said on the show, has been playing better than people want to admit. But still, I mean, I know you just lost Trayvon Diggs. You can't, I mean, Marquise Brown is working Stephon Gilmore. Marquise Brown's a good player, but like, he's working Stephon Gilmore on the outside. You're blowing coverages. Like, Rondell Moore's getting loose on you. Just a pretty, pretty poor performance from Dallas here.
I'll just get Arizona out of the way because they're really quick. They play hard.
Yeah.
Dobbs is poised. James Conner is another guy who's going to outlive all of us. You know, Brown is playable every week. The Zach Ertz circus kind of came to an end this week. Only 2 targets after being targeted off the bus like crazy the first 2 games. But you can play Conner with confidence. And this is the team I thought before the season, oh, okay, Survivor, just pick against Arizona every week. And then they were life and death, you know, with Washington first week, and the Giants needed a crazy comeback to win. So I don't think this win, this upset in retro, it's easy to say now. But I don't think it's all that crazy because I don't think Arizona's as bad as we think. I think if nothing else, the coaching staff has rallied the guys and they play hard. As far as the Dallas, this is just kind of a spot. And producer Colin makes some great points. He's a big Dallas guy and he always has good takes on the Cowboys. The emotional impact of the Diggs injury. They have 3 starting offensive linemen who are all game time decisions and none of them play. You know, this is, again, these, I'm reading right off Colin's notebook here. Is that excuse all the flags, all the blown coverages, you know, all the red zone trips that they didn't cash in on? No, that's why you lose games you shouldn't lose sometimes. But it was a setup spot, an out of division game, emotional hit. You don't have your pieces. And you probably think, okay, maybe we're entitled. You know, all the smoke that's been blown, maybe we're just going to show up and win because they'll cower at the sight of our uniforms and our helmets. And football doesn't work that way. But really interesting game next week against New England. But I still want to buy stock in the Cowboys. And then, I mean, Rico Dodd looked pretty good in this game, I thought. Mm-hmm. And also, they're targeting Ferguson so much in the red zone. I know it hasn't happened for him yet. I still think he has like 7 touchdowns in the back pocket that are going to come out at some point.
Yeah, I'm with you. If the Cardinals are supposed to be tanking and only thinking about next year, like, nobody told the players and nobody told the coaching staff. And that's usually how it goes when we talk about tanking.
I'm so impressed. They play hard, man. They really get after it.
They don't play like they don't play dumb. They don't play like, they're not a good team, but they don't play like a stupid bad team.
Well, the compete level is always there. Like,
and people,
on the Broncos game, I saw a couple of compete level plays that made me wonder, like, that guy took that play off. I don't see that with Arizona.
And everybody, like, you know, I mean, Sean Payton's one of the best coaches in the NFL, blah, blah, blah. And then everybody wants to dunk on Jonathan Gannon. I'm not trying to become like the Jonathan Gannon guy or anything like that. You know, the goofy videos are out there on social media, but the players aren't like tuning him out because they are playing hard. And, you know, this is their reputation and their jobs on the line.
Maybe. I'm just saying maybe. Maybe he's another Dan Campbell. Maybe he's not so much an X's and O's genius, but maybe he can emotionally connect with his players.
In such a weird way, too, because like if you look, put those two humans side by side, mm-hmm. like I couldn't imagine like getting a beer together. You know what I mean? They just look opposite from each other. Jonathan Gannon and Dan Campbell. But hey, whatever it is, I think the players are buying something there. Okay, last game up here. This is if that was the most unpredictable game, Cardinals and Cowboys. This was the most predictable game of the week. Kansas City 41, Chicago Bears 10, and we all were, you know, just thumped over the head over and over again with Taylor Swift stuff all throughout the game. You know, she's saying let's effing go, and Travis Kelce's sweet there to sit next to his mom, and like that was the most. Even if you don't give a damn about Taylor Swift, which you should never publicly say because she's one of the most like popular people on planet Earth. Even if you don't care about Taylor Swift, that was the most interesting thing in this game because the Bears, oh my God. I mean, just a joke. They're just a joke at this point.
I got to give you a Taylor Swift take. And I know Christopher Collins probably like this thing's already 20 minutes off the rails, but so many musicians who I greatly respect, like Beatles, like Bob Dylan, they all talk about what an amazing songwriter Taylor Swift is and how generational she is. I mean, look, she's obviously an unbelievable entertainer and she connects with people, but she's such a smart songwriter. And that's something I know I'm not the target audience for Taylor Swift. You know, I'm not a 17-year-old girl or, you know, or maybe even a millennial, but I have tremendous respect for her songs. Not only are they catchy, but they're so well written. The slant rhyme is outstanding. Slant rhyme goes back to Emily Dickinson. This is the first Emily Dickinson reference we've ever had in this podcast. But I think Taylor Swift's great. I think her and Kelce, it's a fun story. Yeah, does it get beat to death? Kind of, but it's still fun. And of course, if I had known Taylor Swift was going to be there, I just would have pounded every Kelce prop, you know, touchdown. Kelce's always like -190 to score anyway. But right. Yeah. Like he's not going to score.
My God.
Yeah. He's just going up to Mahomes like, hey, you know, T Swift in the house, man. I can't wear it. They won't let me wear 89 for some reason, but you can get me in the end zone. So, and Chicago, congratulations on a day where the Broncos allowed 70 points. You looked like the biggest dumpster fire in the NFL. That was quite an accomplishment. And I thought, I'm going to hammer the Bears for this. I know there's a lot of problems here. But after Justin Fields took a really big shot late in this game, why they allowed him to come back into a game that was not competitive? He's your quote-unquote franchise guy. I realize you want to develop him and get something to feel good about. Put him on the sidelines and keep him safe for the rest of the day and reevaluate tomorrow and reevaluate during the week. I thought it was irresponsible and really kind of cruel to put him back on the field. I had a prop for him to beat his rushing yardage. He missed it by just a few yards. He did run more proactively today, but they should have not had Justin Fields finish this game.
Well, Scott, I did not expect a Taylor Swift diatribe from you an hour plus into this podcast.
My Taylor Swift thoughts.
I'm not going to say diatribe. And I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm just saying I did not expect you to have a Taylor Swift take to drop at this point of the podcast. Are you dropping $4,000 on a Taylor Swift ticket to go to the concert?
No. But by the way, did the Bears have a blank space for their game plan? I mean, you know, are they just going to shake it off? And
You know what I'm shaking off? The damn Bears play the damn Broncos next week, pal. I mean, the two most embarrassing teams I'll tell you what, that game is not going in the binge category for the binge skip stream preview. Okay. That's not happening. So, oh my God, the Bears are just, there was a headline that came out at the beginning of the day that they're like not committed to, you know, they're not committed to being committed to Justin Fields basically. And that like proved everything to me, the way you just outlined how they handled that injury.
I think everything's unnoticed in Chicago. What did they lost? Like, is it 16 out of 17 or 15 out of 16? I can't remember now. I like to go back to week one when they were basically a pick'em against the Packers. Not that the Packers are a monster or anything, but they were a pick'em with Green Bay in week one. How crazy does that sound right now?
It's crazy. It is crazy.
What do you tell somebody who drafted Justin Fields as a fantasy starter? What do you possibly do? Do you need a prove it game? Do you just bench him? Do you try to get a cash out? What do you do?
Find an alternative, man. Yeah, like, can you get CJ Stroud at this point?
Oh, I'd love Stroud.
Like, yeah, you can't play him. The offense is like unfunctional. And Denver, obviously, they just gave up 70 points. But you got to think that defense is going to bounce back next week. Washington in week five is not a bad match, or is a bad matchup for this offense. There's other gettable ones later. Like, they get the Raiders, they get the Chargers, they get Carolina, you know, they go to Detroit. That should be a carnival game. They get Minnesota again in week 12. Like, but this situation just seems unsalvageable. And I think you better find an alternative if you have Justin.
Right now, they're the worst team in football, right?
Yeah, I think they are. They have to be. They're, and again, for people with all the stuff about the Arizona Cardinals, they're playing hard. They're looking good on that side. Like, they're just looking good overall. There's good vibes there. We haven't even touched the atrocious vibes that are around the Chicago Bears right now, just generally.
Arizona's like two or three plays away from being 3-0.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. All right. I think that's going to do it for us today, Scott. Incredible show. Incredible. Pretty good week of football. A lot of interesting games. A lot of interesting things to talk about. And we had a team score 70 damn points, bro. Nobody else I'd rather discuss it with.
It's fun.
All right. For you all out there, shout out to you for sticking with us. Be sure to tune in on Wednesday, where Andy Behrens and I go through the post week 3 regular season version of the People's Panic Meter. Again, you're panicking about things out there. I know you are. So make sure you send an email to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. You can, of course, find the thread I put out on Twitter. You can check that out right now. We'll also talk some top waiver wire pickups. And come on, again, I know you people are panicking, so make sure you send in some submissions. Until then, we're out.